You are listening to the Women's Health Practitioner Podcast. I am Dr. Sarah Wilson, naturopathic doctor, business owner, and practice mentor. And I am on a mission to change how women access healthcare and to change the lives and businesses of the practitioners who are delivering that healthcare. On the Women's Health Practitioner Podcast, we are going to dive into the latest evidence that you need to know to provide your patients with the highest standard protocols. We are also going to talk about business principles, mindset challenges, and all of the things that are holding you back from giving yourself and your patients the best possible experience. I cannot wait to dive into the behind the scenes of how I support and educate both my patients and practitioners and bring you the latest and greatest in things that you need to know to thrive and to help your patients to do the same. Sit back, relax, enjoy the listen, and I cannot wait to hear from you in the reviews and also on Instagram. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast for this very exciting episode on the stress response and liver health and what the heck is going on. So this podcast really came about and was requested a lot when I was out speaking at West. So in January, I was speaking in Victoria and I was speaking in Vancouver, and I actually am going to be speaking in Kelowna soon. So if you're in Kelowna, hit me up. We can get you tickets. But from that space, one of the questions that came up, because I was talking a lot about the liver and fatty liver and what's going on, was that people I mentioned in this talk that were seeing a lot of new and interesting liver issues, right? We're seeing changes in bilirubin, that patterns that have not been seen consistently before, to be honest. And we're seeing a lot of changes in bile acids and a lot of bile acid reflux and bile acid diarrhea. And again, in a really big way, like a much more significant way than I ever have seen in practice before. And we're seeing it across the business. And so whenever patterns like this happen, this is why I always say, again, you got to stay in practice, because whenever patterns like this happen, I'm digging into the research and I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, we all know that fatty liver is an issue, and we all know that it's getting worse, right? Non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is now being called metabolic fatty liver disease so that we can diagnose more people with it, right? We have insulin resistance in upwards of 75% of our population. Like, we're seeing really, really significant challenges. But the interesting and the curious thing about this in the last few years is that it seems like there's a new category of people that are coming to the market. We can call it the market, that are coming into the experience of liver issues, bile acid diarrhea, bile acid reflux, just honestly poor recycling of bile acids as well. We're seeing, and this is a conversation for another day, of course, but we're seeing a lot of cortisol suppression. We're seeing thyroid suppression. We're seeing a lot of loops of dysfunction that all exist around the thyroid. And this is incredibly important to understand and to look at, because for more and more and more places, we are seeing that the liver is a massive, like, I don't know, honestly, in many situations, I'm sitting there being like, is this as important as the gut microbiome, if not more important when we're talking about loops of dysfunction? But you also can't separate the liver and the gut microbiome, which is challenging. And what I mean by that is when we have dysbiosis in the gut, when we have elevated levels of LPS that are going into portal circulation, right? So back to anatomy days, that's the connection and the blood flow between the intestinal tract and the liver. When we see that connection and when we see a lot of inflammation in that portal vein, we know that there can be non-alcoholic or metabolic fatty liver just from that. So these two things connect to then create loops of dysfunction throughout the rest of the body. And again, really key areas where we're seeing that show up is with respect to energy, with respect to mood, with respect to hormonal signaling. And so the bile acid diarrhea conversation is a very interesting one, because what we know to be true is that we recycle, or we should recycle, over 95%, or some say 90 to 95% of our bile acids. So the liver makes bile. Bile is quote unquote stored in the gallbladder, right? The gallbladder squishes that out. Then we're in a situation where, depending on the types of bacteria, we should be converting those primary bile acids into secondary bile acids. And secondary bile acids are hormone related, right? So they become hormones and signaling compounds in the body. They are affecting, as I talked about before, right, thyroid, cortisol. They're also really dramatically affecting insulin. And so if you're really dramatically affecting insulin and also downregulating someone's metabolic function and energy, the likelihood is they're going to gain weight. They're going to become more insulin resistant. There's going to be more and more and more and more layers of dysfunction. And so that pattern, right, you can test. You can test liver, you can test insulin, we can test cortisol, we can test thyroid, we can look at those things. But then what was happening and what we see happening is, even in the midst of fixing all those things, even in the midst of doing antimicrobial protocols, we still have this liver bile pattern that is persisting in some people. And so what do we know to be true about the pandemic? I think that's always the question that I go back to. What do we know to be true? Well, we know that it caused significant inflammatory stress on people. We know that people were more sedentary. There was a lot more alcohol consumption. The liquor bureaus are very excited about that. We see there was a lot of metabolic decompensation. There was less workout. But then also what we saw, there was less and less social connection. There was more stress responses. There were many more norepinephrine and epinephrine responses, because people have trauma around safety and they have trauma around control. And they have trauma around a lot of those pieces. And so there was a lot of safety stuff that came up. There was a lot of fear to do normal activities of daily living. There was a lot of disconnection. There was a lot of stigma. There was just a lot. And so stress responses kicked off in a really big way. We saw cortisol and norepinephrine and epinephrine start to fall downhill. We had the work-life bleed, right? People who are working from home unsuccessfully. There's something I've been talking about a lot with people lately, but I joke that distance is my love language when I'm whelmed. I feel like you guys know a lot about me right now. But from that perspective, there's a book called, it's like Dating in the Wilderness or Dating in the Wild or something like that. And they talk about, for relationships, there's a proximity relationship that's really important. If you're too close to each other all the time, then it's going to be really challenging. But if you're too far, it's going to be really stressful as well. And so we were in this period of time where a lot of people were one of the other. They were either trapped, used to commuting back and forth and seeing each other and they couldn't, or they were on top of each other all the time. So we had relational stress at home. We had relational stress with people being lonely, not seeing friends, not being connected to communities. And then we had all the metabolic exercise, like all of those pieces. And so it was the perfect storm. And so that really got me curious around what's going on at the level of the liver with respect to these hormones. And could this have any relationship? And of course, it's the human body. It's all related. The answer to that was, of course, yes, there is a very strong relationship. And now we think of the liver as a breakdown organ. And so to a lot of people, it would make sense that it's going to be breaking down cortisol and it's going to be breaking down norepinephrine and epinephrine. And how they do that requires nutrients, right? We know that methylation is very involved. We know that MAO is very involved. There's a lot of those factors that are happening. But if you give someone an IV, if you give them methylated B vitamins, right, you are not solving the whole problem there. You can't just give someone methylated B vitamins and choline, right, which are two very important factors for bile to be made properly so that it doesn't get sticky and clunky and cause issues. That's critical to bile. There's just something called PEMT, I'm not going to say it, PEMT, methyltransferase is the end. It's like phosphatidylethanolamide, methyltransferase. But that enzyme is very important in making choline and making the detergent components and making what we need for proper bile cycling. But like I said, if you give choline and you give methylation nutrients, it's not solving the problem. If you give MAO support, right, in terms of breaking down catecholamines, it's not sufficient. And so we really need to understand at a deeper level what's going on. And so there's a few research articles that I'm going to reference, or there's a lot of research in general on this, but I think there's a few that are really, really critical that I want to just drop and break apart. And like I said this in the intro here, or the bio here, I'm not going to give you guys protocols to this because I don't teach on anything until I am 70 to 80% successful. Right? Until we have such a predictable protocol that I'm ready to publish research on it. I don't teach on it until that point. And so in my holistic practitioner growth system, which is launching at the time of this recording, in that course, there is a lot of discussion around liver. And in connections, we talk a lot about cortisol and liver and thyroid, because that pathway is clean, clear, and under control. But this norepinephrine, epinephrine, cortisol pathway is something that we're still tweaking. And I think there's a tertiary, or there's a third or fourth level of this loop that we need to break, and you need to break them all at the same time in order to get at it. So there's the insulin, there's the catecholamines, there's the cortisol, there's the liver, right? But then I think that there's either an inflammatory response or something else we need to look at. And so as soon as I figure that out, I'll talk about it more. But for today, I think it's really important that you guys know this information and that you're starting to look for it and that you're starting to assess how this is coming up, and also just understanding in bite-sized pieces what you could be missing and what you should be looking at, because I think those are also really, really critical pieces. So when we're talking about catecholamines, norepinephrine and epinephrine, they're released from sympathetic endings, right? And so we have that locally and we also have that systemically. And so when we're looking at those issues, right, or when we're looking at those releases, we have neurons that are in the hypothalamus that are very sensitive to leptin, insulin, and GLP-1. So for everyone who's like, I wonder why insulin is causing panic attacks, right, or GLP-1, the incretin hormone, is involved with such significant layers of dysfunction. Well, here's your answer, right? It's directly involved with the release of catecholamines at the level of the brain. And so when we have these really highs and lows, this insulin resistance, we can see this come up. When we have inappropriate GLP-1 signaling, we can see that come up, and we can see these really significant stress responses that are coming around with it. There's also glucose-sensing neurons in that area, right? And when these two systems are activated, they're sending sympathetic nerve fibers to the liver. They're sending this response for a local release of norepinephrine. So there's this very, again, this strong connection between the brain and the liver in terms of the brain assessing and seeing that there could be insulin and glucose and glucose regulation issues. Like, you look at GLP-1, it's regulating glucose. It's not even directly affecting it in a super, super clear way. It's the body sensing the absence of control is coming in, which is so cool and so crazy. So that's a really big connection factor there that we're seeing again in practice. Why are people more and more and more stressed? Why are people less and less and less resilient? I'm having these conversations every day with my clinicians. Like, where did the resilience go? Right? But when we have these GLP-1 issues, when we have these insulin issues, it is in a really big way affecting and depleting what's going on from the perspective of the liver and what's going on from the perspective of the stress response. And then we also have the vagal and spinal nerves, right, that are very specific to regulation of the release of catecholamines around glucose, metabolites, pH, and cytokines, right? So in response to inflammatory stimulation, in addition to the other pieces that we've already talked about, the hypothalamus can activate those sympathetic fibers, and then we can get that epinephrine release into the periphery and that catecholamine release into the periphery. And so these are, again, very strong relationships. And then we know that catecholamines at the level of the liver are affecting a variety of different processes, right? We see that when we have high catecholamines in the liver, we can increase the production of glucose. We can have hyperglycemia. We see that there's a cell called, well, there's a couple different cells, but there's a cell called stellate cells. And so they are triggered in that situation with increased sympathetic activity to trigger norepinephrine release, but also inflammatory release at the level of the liver. Aren't we seeing a lot of that? Right? We also see the Kupffer cells, which are very mast cell dominant. There's a lot of histamine responses that are going on there in addition to other cytokines. Those guys are triggered to jump up and contribute to the inflammatory milieu. Then we have this increase in lipid content that happens and these fatty livers that are coming up, which are then feeding forward and causing more and more and more issues. So we're getting this local inflammation. We're getting this fat content, we're getting this stress response and this inflammatory response. And again, these people are stuck in that loop of dysfunction because that is then contributing to worse and worse sympathetic activity, more and more insulin resistance, more and more GLP-1 receptor issues. And the list goes on and on and on and on. So I thought, again, I think it's so cool, this stuff and how it works. So I thought that would be an interesting one for you guys to see. And you might need to listen to this a couple of times, but it's really, really important that we look at this and understand this. Another really important connection is that when we are hungry and when our glucose is low, so it's both, when we have a hunger signal and our glucose is low, we make cortisol, right? Low grade, our body's like, hey, just in case I need to tide you over, I'm going to be getting ready to make glucose, right? I'm going to be getting ready for glycogenolysis and for gluconeogenesis. But what this, and this is like, this is top level shit. You guys, can you imagine what it's like to hang out with me? I am a nerd, but I get very excited by this. And I can guarantee there's going to be some people who screenshot this section of the podcast and they're like, no way. But anyways, hepatic cells can receive signals through cortisol receptors, glucocorticoid receptors, that cause the filling of the gallbladder with bile. And then in that situation, the preparation of bile release, and arguably, this is where we can see aberrant bile release. So when we have someone who's kicking off norepinephrine and epinephrine responses and cortisol responses all day long, there is a huge opportunity for bile to be released at the wrong period of time, which then becomes an irritant in the gastrointestinal tract, or they're constipated and have overgrowth. It goes either way, right? If you have high cortisol, right, that can be a very different response than low cortisol. But we need cortisol to be involved in the recycling process, in the enterohepatic recycling process. It's involved with filling and preparing for a meal. But we don't just have cortisol responses when we are in a situation that are like that we're hungry. We have them all day long. And so that combination of those two things, I think, is a huge reason why we are seeing these really, really significant liver, gallbladder, gallstone, constipation, bacterial overgrowth, and issues with respect to the bile acid diarrhea. So moral of that story is that there is a very strong interconnected loop between what is happening with the liver and the stress response. And there's a very strong interconnected loop between inflammation and the liver and inflammation and the stress response. And that those connections are getting closer and closer and closer and tighter and tighter and tighter. And so as much as this research is new, it pans out in practice. And so I always like to bring you guys those interesting connections and those features that we don't have an RCT on. I'm not pretending we do, but this is how it's showing up physiologically. And again, with the volume of patients we see at Advanced Women's Health, I can tell you that there is a relationship here that's really strong and really powerful, and we really, really, really need to pay attention to. So I hope that was helpful. I hope that wasn't too mind-boggling for people in terms of me running through those different things. But again, keep in mind that the liver and the brain are signaling and looping together, that the liver is filtering out our catecholamines and our cortisol, but also dramatically affected by those things. So if you're not filtering and you're not processing and you're responding to high levels, we have really significant dysfunctional levels that are ongoing and that are, and we see that people are just, their resilience is just going down and they're just falling down the hill. So I would love to hear from you guys if you found that interesting. If you want more of this type of connect the dots content, this is honestly what I'm doing all day, every day with my team. This is what I'm doing in my courses, like the Holistic Practitioner Growth System, which you can get information about in the link below. But from that perspective,
I really just, I want you guys to be able to piece together the mysteries because they're not that mysterious. There's almost always a reason in the research if you look deep enough and you connect the dots in a powerful enough way. And that's really what I wanted to drive home for you guys is there's so much beauty and there's so much power in the human body, and it's so dysfunctional when it loops on itself. And again, you trickle your way down the hill. But it's also, there's so much ease and beauty in fixing that when you understand how to address those foundational aspects of health and break people out of those loops of dysfunction. So I hope you enjoyed. I will talk to you guys very, very soon.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, I would love a review because that is how more people find out about us and ultimately get well. If you are a medical practitioner and you're interested in taking one of my courses to learn how to implement these research strategies, see naturopathicmentorship.com. If you're a patient, we have a couple of options. I can try to hook you up with one of my trained practitioners, or alternatively, if you have a practitioner you love, I do offer one-on-one consults about your case to support that practitioner in learning further. For more information on these strategies, see the show notes. And finally, if you just want to keep in touch, I am always active on Instagram and Facebook, and I look forward to connecting with you there. Have a great day and be well.